Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then we consider what you know of the news of the day. Now, after being suspended for more than a year, the Malaysia My Second Home program will be reactivated tomorrow, October 1st, but this time with more stringent eligibility requirements for new applicants. Now, the Ministry of Home Affairs has said that these changes were needed for national security reasons and that the government aims to attract quality individuals to make Malaysia their second home. The eligibility terms for the program have been met with strong objections by stakeholders and industry players, even the Sultan of Johor. Now, Anthony Liu has also voiced his concern. He's the president of the Malaysia My Second Home Consultants Association. He joins us on the line now. Anthony, good evening. The Malaysia My Second Home program was launched in 2002. The idea was to promote the country as a retirement destination so you can live in Malaysia for 10 years on a multiple entry social visit pass. And I'm just wondering, Anthony, do you think that, 20 years down the road now, that whether this program has actually kept to those initial objectives or do you think it's strayed?
Yeah, for my understanding, the program has spurred the nation economy. Especially for sector like education, medication, property, and also have tourism for Malaysia, and of course have other like restaurant, hotel. I think this is quite a lot to Malaysia. For our figure, from the MMT Center's figure, from 2007 until 2019, its give revenue to Malaysia is 21.1 billion. Right. So actually, for our calculation, we have one calculation is about 38.8 billion from 2002 until 2009. So I think this is one of the objective of MM2H to get a financial capability person to join this program. And of course, it's one of the objectives for those who capability and retire in Malaysia and spend money in Malaysia.
And then can I ask you if anything was holding back the program? Because some people who are critical say that it hasn't been so successful, the number of applicants isn't that great. Could it have been better? And if so, what was holding it back from becoming Malaysia becoming a destination for precisely these types of demographics, these people that you talk about, the high net worth individuals?
For high net worth, this is our minister mentioned. This MM2H has been changed to, the higher terms, which is quite drastic change. For my understanding, the high net worth they refer to maybe is a rich and less a criminal issue. But for my understanding, not all the rich people don't have the issue. Don't have a criminal issue, but for security wise, I quite agree. We have to tighten up the security issue. We have to check on. We have more concern on security issue, but the economy side we have to still have to cover. So I quite believe quality people who like to looking for the quality place, and Malaysia is very good quality place. But not necessary that rich people, normal people also are quality people. Middle and average. Okay,
yeah,
average
and above. You don't have
it's quality
to,
people. Yeah.
To be quality.
Yeah.
And I ask you, Anthony, in your experience and also with the consultants in your association, as part of the association, can I ask you where you're seeing the most applications come from? And also whether the applications that come in are easily approved? I'm just wondering what the process is like. Do you understand the reasons for a certain application being approved or rejected?
Okay, for our understanding, normally because as a consultant or agent, we have to go through the all the document before we submit. So we will screen out everything first. We filter out for those who are not qualified, we won't accept. and we won't submit to the authority. So that's why we can consider that it's quite high approval, quite high percentage of approval, because we already filter out for those disqualified, we filter out already. So we just submit. I mean, our agent is quite responsibility also. Of course, one or two maybe is not, but most of our agent or consultants, we consider that it's quite qualified and they filter all the document before they submit. So that's why some of the people say too high percentage, but because we do the filter.
What is the consequence of this move by the government? Will it mean that people will be turned away from Malaysia? Will they think of Malaysia as a less attractive option?
Okay, if let's say the old terms, I think that is still very competitive and very attractive to the people. But also, because Malaysia is a very strategic and very good weather, multicultural, multi-language, and very attractive to other people. If let's say this so high terms, I think it's less competitive, because less attractive as well. Because our neighbor country like Thailand, they have many plans, different plans to suit to different people. So if let's say our program is not so friendly and then not so flexible, perhaps we lost this person. As we have a survey before, if let's say those terms implement to the existing customer, I think most of the existing customer will terminate their program, and then right. The next benefit country is Thailand. What we survey is.
I see. Okay, so Thailand will probably benefit from applications who no longer are interested in Malaysia. I'm just wondering, there was a lot of hand-wringing when the government announced these new rules, the stricter rules. A lot of uncertainty whether this would apply to existing visa holders or to the new applicants only. I'm just wondering whether you think the management of this policy change could have been done better.
Oh, well, I hope that our government will have a good policy to treat this our existing customer first. This is very important because they contribute to Malaysia quite a lot. And then, of course, we have met the minister have mentioned some of them, they never into to Malaysia because before that, they don't have these terms. So perhaps after some of the terms implement, so we can tell our customer who have to come to Malaysia. But else this, just now mentioned that this term is quite high. So I hope that government will look into other aspects like economy side. And then, of course, the security side, we all know compromise. We have to fulfill all this security check. And then economy side, I hope that government can look into it and then have some better terms and do some adjustment.
Okay, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Anthony Liu there from the Malaysia My Second Home Consultants Association. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this, but we will be right back. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. Watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. If you've just joined us on the show tonight, we're discussing the new and more stringent rules for the Malaysia My Second Home program. Ao Fung Yee is the editor-in-chief and managing director of EdgeProp Malaysia. She joins us now. Fung Yee, you've been watching the My Second Home program for a while now. As I understand it, you've taken note of all the different responses from the stakeholders and the different administrations that we've seen in the past few years. What are your overall thoughts on this My Second Home program? And did you think it was a problematic program to begin with?
Okay, let's go back to when it started, and that was actually two decades ago. It's 20 years old now, the program, because it kind of like evolved from the civil health head program that we first launched, and then, you know, it has since evolved into Malaysia, My Second Home. I think it is, Melissa, it's actually very simple. I think, you know, everybody knows, or rather the powers that be, everybody up there knows what is MM2H. And why we are doing it, and, you know, the pros and the cons. We just have to make a decision as to whether Malaysia wants that program or not. I think, you know, that is the question that's before us right now. If we want it, you know, why do we want it? And what is it that we need to do in order to attain that kind of objectives? Right. So I think, you know, it's about time that, you know, we really be clear and move forward from now, you know, because, you know, with all this flip flopping and, you know, after a span of like a 1 year, the program is resumed with a lot of rude surprises for a lot of people. That is something that is definitely not going to sit well for the image of Malaysia.
Yeah, for so, me, I understand what you're saying about, you know, and I think this is what the critics are saying. It's very damaging the way this whole issue has and program has been handled. But coming back to your fundamental point, which is that whether Malaysia wants to play this game or not. And, you know, I think what a lot of people are not aware of is the global market for a segment of very rich or middling to very rich individuals who are seeking to relocate from their countries of origin, bringing with them great wealth. And we talk about the billionaires of China. We talk about, you know, the exodus of, you know, over 20,000 Indian millionaires looking for greener pastures for themselves and their families. This is a market. I mean, this is a business proposition. Where do you think, Fong Yi, policy should be focused in terms of that particular factoid?
I think that's a really good point that you've raised, Shirat, you know, because yes, indeed, you know, there's a lot of plum fishes out there. But before we try and go out there and throw our net at these catches, first we need to re-examine ourselves. Are we in the position to attract that segment of the market? What is the competition out there? In other words, what I'm saying is, let us be realistic, right? I mean, you know, aspiration is one thing. I mean, we can aspire to do a lot of things, you know, but the reality is there before us. So we've got to kind of code according to our cloth, so to say. You know, let's be realistic. Yeah. So right. Does that answer your question?
Fong Yi, I might come back to that in a bit, but I do want to ask you about some of the criticisms that's been thrown to levied at the Malaysia My Second Home program. You know, critics are saying, well, you know, it's not that impressive if you look at the number of applications, statistics on the program, and some also point to the fact that property developers have been the primary beneficiary. And I'm just wondering whether you think that's fair criticism.
Okay, maybe I'll just take your second question first, Mel, you know, that the mm-hmm. property developers are the beneficiary of MM2H. Honestly, if you ask me, that's a very myopic view on the whole matter, right? You know, because when somebody uproots from his or her country and come and spend their time and invest their money in a place called Malaysia, you know, the money just doesn't flow into the pockets, into the accounts of the real estate developers. True, they might benefit in a way, in a sense that some of these participants may decide ultimately to invest in a property in Malaysia, but there's no necessity for them to do that if they choose not to do that. They don't have to, number one. Even if they should choose to buy a property in Malaysia, what's wrong about that? I mean, you know, we have enough laws out there governing the foreign purchase of our real estate in Malaysia. So there's nothing to worry about, right? Again, you know, it goes back to the objective of the Malaysian government. Do we or do we not want this program? If we want, let's sit down, engage with the stakeholders, and just, you know, trash it out. What are your concerns? So moving forward, what is the solution? I think that's important, the engagement, right? You know, putting your ear on the ground is important.
Yeah, for me, I want to come back to what is realistic. Say, for instance, you know, the government decides, okay, let's play this game and let's play this well. Who would be attractive to Malaysia? Because there is a suggestion that the government wants or aspires to quality applicants. But what do they mean by that? Are there countries, residents of countries they don't want? I mean, is a rich millionaire or a millionaire from China not as desirable as a millionaire from the UK or Australia? What exactly do you think is going on in the minds of policymakers when they say these things?
Yeah, I think you've just hit the nail, you know. There is no clarity. I think, you know, they must be engagement with the market. You know, if this is the segment of the market that you think that you desire, fair enough, there must be reasons for it. Maybe there are security reasons that we are, you know, not privy to, fair enough, because, you know, security is one thing that nobody should ever even attempt to compromise, right? But let us sit down and talk, you know, because one of the most disturbing feedback from the stakeholders over this current period is that there have been no engagement at all. And apparently, well, this has been said to me, I cannot vouch for it, but these players claim that they had actually had been trying to make attempts to speak to the ministry to understand a little bit more. But so far, it's in vain. So, you know, hard to tell, you know, what is in the mind of the ministry. What do you mean by quality? Quality as in you have a big bank account or what? You know, like I think, you know, what Anthony just mentioned, there's no guarantee that, you know, a rich person is a law-abiding person or vice versa. Yeah. So exactly. I definitely think that, you know, we really need a lot more clarification from the government.
Yeah, definitely true. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight, Feng Yi. Appreciate your time. I'm Feng Yi there from EdgeProp Malaysia. Let's take another quick break, but we will come back and discuss more about the Malaysia My Second Home new requirements. Stay tuned to consider this. Thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion on the Malaysia My Second Home program, because after being suspended for more than a year, it's now going to be reactivated starting tomorrow, but this time with more stringent eligibility requirements for new applicants. So let's speak to Carmelo Felito. He's the CEO of the think tank Center for Market Education. Carmelo, critics of the Malaysia My Second Home program has pointed out that, you know, some of the statistics have not been as impressive when questioning the actual amount of you know, the multiplier effect of, say, expatriate investment here in the country under this program. I'm just wondering where you stand on this. Who do you think programs like the MM2H program benefits the most?
Okay, so the first point is very important, the one that you mentioned, and also the other guest mentioned earlier, the fact that the program has not been very successful. So the question is, if it was not according to the expectations, why to make it even less attractive? So if you want to make a program better, it should be more attractive rather than less attractive. So this is the very first point. And indeed, Malaysia needs to clarify and understand where the country stands in the global competition to attract retired people. So obviously, the target is people that are retiring or that are going to retire. And I think that probably the biggest mistake that has been done in implementing the program is not leveraging on the higher number of the, on the high number of expatriates that are working in Malaysia, and somehow built an automatic corridor that bring people with work permit or talent corp into the second home when they are close to retirement. So try to extend their life in Malaysia beyond their professional experience.
Carmelo, our first guest, Anthony Liu from the Malaysia My Second Home Consultants Association, in fact, believes that Malaysia has benefited in quoted numbers in the billions. The question, I guess, for policymakers is that what is the cost to Malaysia? So if you want to say that these billions are not good enough, is it because they somehow policymakers believe that there's a cost, whether it's an economic cost or a social cost that has to be borne, which then makes these billions, you know, unattractive as a proposition for policymakers and for the government of the day? I mean, do you understand, you know, what do we lose by having, you know, 60,000 expatriates living in this country and spending their money here?
Yeah, in fact, I honestly don't see what we are going to lose. Of course, there are risks and have been mentioned in terms of security, but the risks are everywhere. Risk zero doesn't exist. So I think that in the end, the benefits that these people are bringing in the country are much higher than the costs. You can eventually be stricter in certain regulations and also be aware that there is probably a higher risk with richer people that can commit a higher level of crimes like money laundering and these kind of things, rather than on the normal retired person with an income between 10 and 15,000 ringgit that comes here because of the good weather, because of a good and affordable healthcare system, or because of the education system bringing children here. So I honestly don't see the ratio of the cost. Given the numbers, these expatriates are not hoarding or appropriating or exploiting the property markets. They are not stealing jobs. So honestly, I really don't see the social cost here.
All right. Do you? I'm just wondering whether, you know, how you would compare the MM2H program, and where does Malaysia stack up comparative to other countries? Do we want to kind of compete for the similar bracket of applicants, or are we, you know, are we aiming for a segment of billionaires that everybody is also aiming for?
Yeah, it seems that everybody is indeed fishing in the same pond. And if I look at programs for retiree people, both in the region and outside of the region are all more attractive. I was doing a brief research, and I found out very interesting programs in Panama, in Greece, not only in Thailand and Philippines. So you have to position yourself in this big market and wonder why an extremely rich person should or would choose Malaysia for retirement. In this sense, that's why I was mentioning at the beginning to change the target and somehow to build this program as a port of destination for long-term expatriates and professionals. So introducing this new corridor that would leverage on something that you already have in Malaysia, rather than going and compete directly with all these packages that are more attractive around the world. I was looking at Panama, it is enough to have $1,000 of income and being more than 18 years old, and you are already welcome in the country.
Carmelo, do you think that perhaps you know, the origins of the people who are actually here on the program have actually colored the way policymakers? So I'm thinking of the fact that a large number of people from China and Korea actually make up the bulk of people on the program. Do you think that might be what is actually the unstated but coded messages that we're getting from government with regard to what is desirable or undesirable for a recipient of this program?
Yes, I believe so. And in fact, the fact that one third of the people in the program are from China could be a source of concern for the government. And here, probably what also I mentioned earlier, the issue of potential money laundering, I think is playing a role. But these are all obstacles that can be overcome with different systems, with more stringent controls, eventually also with quota system. Why not quota per countries, and eventually fill in different nationalities only if other countries didn't take their quotas. So there are more, I would say, softer ways to play around. Considering one important fact, there is an old Latin way to say that is pecunia non olet, so money don't smell.
Camilla, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight and making those excellent points. Camilla Polito from the Center for Marker Education, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. Before we leave you tonight, a reminder that the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines can be gotten at our Astro Awani app as well as astroawani.com. Thank you so much for watching the show. I'm Melissa Idris.
And remember, Melissa, money don't smell. I'm Sharad Kutin signing off for the evening.
No, it doesn't. Same time tomorrow. Thank you, folks. Good night.
Good night.